This week is familiar to all of us as Americans. There are similar situations, celebrations like this in other countries. But this is unique. I think everyone is unique to individual countries, what we're celebrating in the coming week. Thursday, of course, is the annual holiday here within the country of Thanksgiving. Its origins, though, are very, very different than what we see today, at least in terms of the image of the holiday. I'll just give you this background here. It's from historychannel.com. Relative to this holiday and some background on it. The first Thanksgiving, I think we all recognize, was first attributed to the Pilgrims in 1621 when they landed. They actually landed in what is now Plymouth, Massachusetts, because they came from Plymouth in England, the coast of England, in 1620. But that first year was really difficult for them. And the following year is when they celebrated that first Thanksgiving meal, as we would refer to it. They didn't call it that, but I'll just read this for you. It'll give you some history of the day itself and help us to recognize again the origins of this. It's obviously not one of God's holy days, but it is something that we respect within the church, recognizing that respecting the leadership of countries when they ask us to thank God for our blessings, we certainly do comply. This is from, again, history.com. Throughout that first brutal winter, this is from 1620 to 1621, most of the colonists remained on board the ship. They were where they suffered from exposure, scurvy, and outbreaks of contagious disease. Only half of the Mayflower's original passengers and crew lived to see their first New England spring. That's pretty amazing that over half of them died that within the first their first 6 months there. After the Pilgrims' first corn harvest proved successful, Governor William Bradford, by the way, the pastor of the Chicago Church, United Church of God in Chicago, William Bradford is descended from the same William Bradford. And his father, who now is in Australia, used to be the head of the Australian work, was descended from the same Bill Bradford, and his Bill Bradford's son, you're not allowed to call him Billy. He's William Bradford as well. So the tradition is they're all named William Bradford, going back to the Mayflower. By the way, this is an old joke. I'll just break into it here. If April showers, relative to the cloud reference in the sermonette, if April showers bring May flowers, what do May flowers bring? You should know by now. Pilgrims. You probably made that connection well in advance. I'll go back to the reading here. So after the Pilgrims' first corn harvest proved successful, Governor Bill Bradford organized a celebratory feast and invited a group of the fledgling colony's Native American allies, including the Wampanoag chief Massasoit. Now remembered as America's first Thanksgiving, although the Pilgrims themselves may not have used the term at that time, the festival lasted for 3 days. During the American Revolution, the Continental Congress designated one or more days of Thanksgiving a year, and in 1789, George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation by the national government of the United States. In it, he called upon Americans to express their gratitude for the happy conclusion to the country's war of independence and the successful ratification of the U.S. Constitution. His successors, John Adams and James Madison, also designated days of thanks during their presidencies. I want to pause here for a second just to point something out as I read through this. God is hardly mentioned in this, but these initial celebrations were all focused on thanking God in the light of what they were going through. So you see the difficulties the Pilgrims were going through in 1620, 21, and 22. 1623, they did it again. They had very difficult years initially and barely survived, but they offered thanks. Revolutionary War was over by this point in time. The Constitution was a long time in development, but Washington wanted to give thanks. You'll see these patterns over and over. But this is a fairly recent academic understanding of the history And it's surprising how little God is mentioned on a day that was designed by the leaders of this nation to give God thanks for our blessings. I'll go back to the reading now. Then Abraham Lincoln, on October 3rd, 1863, at the height of the Civil War, proclaimed the final Thursday in November a national holiday, entreating all Americans to ask God to commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife, and to heal the wounds of the nation. It's an official proclamation. You'll see many of the same references in what Washington wrote in 1789. Back to the article. The day was celebrated on that final Thursday in November every year until 1939. You see this now beginning to change. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt moved the holiday up a week in an attempt to spur retail sales during the Great Depression. Roosevelt's plan, known derisively as Franksgiving, was met with passionate opposition, and in 1941, the president reluctantly signed a bill making Thanksgiving the fourth Thursday in November. This is you see this history over time moving further and further away from thanking God and into a different perspective. This perspective was, well, we need this revenue early from all this Christmas shopping, so let's move it up a week. Instead of focusing on God, the focus is being lost. In many American households today, the Thanksgiving celebration, and this is quoting the article directly, the Thanksgiving celebration has lost much of its original religious significance. If you look around at what we do today, how this holiday is promoted, by the way, Thanksgiving used to be the second highest revenue producing holiday, national holiday of the year. The first obviously was Christmas, but do you know what's replaced it now? Halloween. More money spent on Halloween. And you may have seen this, Halloween decorations in the fronts of lawns, elaborate parties, and all kinds of that kind of celebration costs a lot. They spend a lot on it. It's really true that we've lost a lot of the religious significance. And for those of us who are religious, who do worship God, and who truly want to give thanks to God, it may be difficult for us to make connections. I've talked to many people in the church over the years who've moved further and further away from celebrating the holiday, because they can't see or make a disconnect from football and pumpkin pie and turkey and the gluttonous activities of what this feast has become, and a national thanking of God for his blessings. Many now refer to the holiday as Turkey Day. You heard that? I see this more and more on calendars, official calendars, not calling it Thanksgiving, because the implication is, who are you thanking? I've seen some people sit around tables being thankful to other people at the table. I'm thankful to my employer. I'm thankful for this and that, but no mention of God, no focus on God. And again, most just focus on the turkey. That's fitting. They keep it not in expressing joyful appreciation to God, but in what could be described and has been described today as hedonistic, self-indulgent gluttony and excess, sports and entertainment. There's certainly nothing wrong with sharing and enjoying in God's blessings with family and friends, okay? Nothing wrong with turkey or football. Some of you may argue with that, but it certainly isn't the gladiator sports of years ago where people met their end in death in the ring, but these things are wonderful reminders of his benevolence. We have freedoms in this land that we should be grateful for, specifically being able to worship God in freedom. But also the abundance of what we can share in a meal that day, the fact that family can be together, even though we may be dispersed. I've got two daughters in Ohio, another two daughters in Oklahoma. We're trying to get back together again as a family on this day, and that's always a good thing. So all those things are wonderful reminders of God's benevolence on a day the nation has set apart to thank him. So we try to celebrate that. In James 1, verse 17, I'll just read this for you. James 1, verse 17, James writes, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning." This is a kind of the theme of our thanking God every day of our lives. At this focus day, as the nation wants us to approach our God in prayer and in thanks, that should be on our mind as we approach this day. Look at Deuteronomy 8. We were warned of this, at least Israel was warned of this. Deuteronomy chapter 8, we'll read verses 11 through 20. And this isn't the only warning here, but it puts into context what has happened to our nation and what happens typically to human beings in the midst of abundance. We tend to forget where that abundance comes from. We tend to attribute it to the work of our own hands, and we tend to ignore and not recognize how dependent we are for life and all of its needs on God. Deuteronomy 8, and we'll read verses 11 through 20. "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten," and we'll be doing a lot of that this week, "and are full," and we will have that feeling of satiation where we are now, our stomachs are full. Remember, we talked a week or so ago about the difference between joy and happiness. In that moment, we'll probably be happy, but that dissipates. Just like the hunger comes back at some point, there's got to be something deeper in that. And there needs to be a joy in that thanksgiving, not just a feeling of happiness or abundance. "Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them," which we do. If ever you've gone to some other country with a longer history than we've had here, at least within our culture, we've visited some castles in England when we were over there for the feast. And we're thinking, wow, the kings living in castles, they had it wonderful. No, there was no internal plumbing. There was no heat. She had a massive fireplace. I mean, it was cold and frigid. No windows. Most castles had these little slits so they could be defended from people that were attacking them. This is how kings lived then. We live better today than kings lived hundreds of years ago. And when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver, your gold are multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, this is what happens. The heart gets lifted up. That means that our focus of the stuff that are the core of our being isn't based in a humble recognition for what God has given us. We tend to think that we did this. We become proud of what we're capable of doing, of what we know and what our skills and abilities are. When your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, thirsty land in which there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is to this day. Then it shall be that if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, ultimately all worship of a false god begins with a worship of self. We make the determination as to who we serve and don't recognize that that should be the one and eternal God. And you follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Many have described our nation in this day and age as filled with abundance, filled with opportunity, filled with wealth, but increasingly more godless. and the heart of what used to be the strength of our country in the religious beliefs of its people. I think it was Alexis de Tocqueville that said that the strength of the U.S. a culture is its churches, not its government buildings, not its army, but it's in the character of the people and their service to God. And that was, I think he was an admitted communist. He could at least see that and saw that as very, very formidable when the character of the people was that strong and that focused and singular in their cause and their existence, their understanding of who they were, who they came from, who they worshiped together. That was an incredible strength that couldn't be overcome. In the midst of the abundance, though, of our nation, we've forgotten where it all came from. And too often we credit ourselves. This is something that we have to avoid all the time, but specifically as we keep this holiday. How are we to give thanks? It'd be like a title for your notes. The title of this message is simply Giving Thanks. Note that expression, give thanks. This is a thanksgiving that we'll be doing. How do we do that? How are we to give God thanks? Surely, expressing gratitude toward God includes much more than, like I said, turkey, pumpkin pie, football. You may have some other way of doing this, and whatever you take that day off and involve yourself with. But when asked by the leaders of the nation to thank our God, how would you go about this? Would you fast? That's not necessarily what is being called for here. There is a recognition of the abundance that we have, and there's nothing wrong, again, with the meal, with the activities, with the family get-togethers, even in watching a football game, it can be recognized as an opportunity for freedom. But there's something that all thanking requires. It involves four things. And what I'd like to do is identify that, break down what thanksgiving is. So when we give thanks to anyone, what are we actually doing? Are we just speaking the words? I really appreciated Mr. Wagner's sermonette. Clouds without water, meaning somebody who's got words but no real intent or content behind the words. There's no real action backing up what they're saying. Even in terms of promising to give a gift or even to give thanks and not doing it. This is kind of what we've become as a nation. It's all about image. It's all about what we see. It's all about what other people see in us rather than what we become internally. Expressing thanks to someone involves four things. First, appreciating what we've been given. Appreciating what we've been given, valuing it, having value, and noting that it was given to us. We don't just have this. Even if we have worked hard and accomplished something, built our own home, earned enough money to buy our own house, whatever, we've been given that opportunity by the society that we live in, by others who have supported that, by others who educated us, by our parents who reared us and birthed us and reared us to be able to do these kinds of things. We are beholding to others, but often we don't recognize that. You've heard this, we've heard this so many times. It's my life. I'll do with it what I want to do. It's my life. Is it? Are we that disconnected from those around us? Are we that disconnected from those who went before us to give us the ability to do all of this? And beyond any of that, the God who provided all this for us? You know, what we enjoy as a descendant of ancient Israel are the blessings that God promised Abraham. We are the beneficiaries of this. You may think, well, we work harder than anybody else on the planet. That's why we have more. Wrong. And if you've ever had an opportunity to know people in other countries, you recognize that many of them work much harder than we do, but don't have the opportunities, the materials, the blessings that we have. And as a nation, we've rejected those. We are what Moses described here in Deuteronomy. We've forgotten where this all came from. Number one, appreciate what we've been given. Number two, realize the source for what we have been given. The source. Where did it come from? You ever pull something out of your closet and look at it and you go, wow, this is really great. I've had this for 20 years. I've missed this. Where has it been? And maybe it's a toy or something that reminded you of in the past of what playing with it and all the good times that you had. Do you make a connection back to the fact that maybe someone gave that to you? A parent or a sibling or a friend? And do you make the connection there to that relationship that began that way? Or maybe was bolstered by that gift? Because that's really important. We have to realize the source for the things that we have been given. Thirdly, we have to recognize the intent of the giver. So if we're going to be expressing thanks, if we're going to be giving thanks and thanking somebody for somebody, we can't do this apart from these things. Note and appreciating what's been given, having there's value to it. Realizing the source of where that value came from in that gift, and thirdly, recognizing the intent of the giver. What was the intent? You may bring like one of these white elephant gifts that we have for bingo. You may be looking around your house and go, what do we need to get rid of that we could give? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about somebody who has, and if you've known somebody whose love language is gift giving, you've seen this. They know you. They've studied you. They recognize what would be a great gift to you. And when they give it to you, you feel horrible, right? Because you don't have that ability. If you gave them last year, during a similar occasion, you may have given them a gift certificate to a store that they could go to, or a Visa card with 10 bucks on it. Here you go. And that's the extent of some of our gift giving. But someone who's really skilled at it knows exactly how to cut to the heart of somebody they're giving something to. And when that has happened to you, if you've ever experienced that, what is the intent of the giver? The intent of the giver is to either build a relationship, start one, or build it. And then lastly, number four, we need to be able to commit to the relationship. Full giving of thanks requires that we now not just recognize the relationship that's being built, but commit to it. We have a part in it. Okay, it's not about retaliating or giving back or outgiving other people. It's about making a connection in a shared giving to one another. Okay? I've known people in my life, I grew up in a family where you couldn't give anything to anyone. Because it became a contest. Okay, then I'm going to outgive you. Oh, because I can't go to my grave owing people who have given me all this stuff. I think I've told you this story before. I used to go mow my Aunt Stacia's lawn. She was a widow, and just to be nice to her. So she would bring me into the house afterwards, and she'd make me a sandwich and a glass of tea, and we'd be sitting there talking. And she would have $3 that she would take out of her pocket, and she would slide it toward me on the table, toward me, as I'm sitting there eating. And we're not looking at the $3. I could just see it like out of the corner of my eye. And then as we were talking, I put my hand on the $3 and slid it back to her. And I could see her getting a little bit red-faced, but she's still not looking at the money, and she slides it right back to me. And then I slide it back to her. But before I let go, this time I go, what is that? She turns around, and I run out the door, and I leave the $3 there. She yells, you stinker! So she grabs the $3, and she comes running out after me. Now, Aunt Stacia died at 97. She's under 5 feet tall, weighed about 95 pounds at this time, but she was feisty. Anyway, I ran to my car, and I'm backing out of the driveway. She comes running out of her house and down the steps. She dives across the hood of my car and sticks the $3 under my windshield wiper. And she runs back in the house. Now, I guess I could have gotten out of my car and put it back in her mailbox or something, although that's probably illegal. In either case, I figured, okay, that's fine. And I've learned over the years, based upon what Paul says in Acts, it's a better thing to give than to receive. You have to learn that. And in order for anybody to be blessed by giving, we've all got to learn how to receive, right? So I hope if you're stuck in any kind of competing battle of giving with somebody, it's not like that. Remember these four things, because I want to read through a couple of scriptures that where somebody is expressing thanks to God in similar situations to what we've heard about the history, the difficulty of Plymouth Rock, the difficulty of the Revolutionary War, Civil War, and so on, to see if we can kind of reclaim what God expects when we're giving thanks to Him. Remember those four. Appreciate what we have been given. Realize the source for what we have been given. Recognize the intent of the giver. And then lastly, commit to the relationship. How do these biblical expressions of thanks express these? Let's go to Psalm 100 here first. This is, the Psalms are filled with expressions of thanks. But this specific psalm is actually called a psalm of thanksgiving. And it expresses these four things in a very tight, succinct statement that David penned down and saved for us. I believe this is a psalm of David. It doesn't say that. But a lot of these were written by others, actually penned down by others, expressing thoughts that he had expressed. A psalm of thanksgiving, that's right up front. Psalm 100, a psalm of thanksgiving. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. You'll notice this reference to verbally praising God as an element of thanking Him. I don't know if you recognize this, but in our song service, also in opportunities for special music, every one of these in praising God is also an offering of thanks to God. Many of these songs, and throughout the Psalms, the singer and the writer of the song is expressing thanks. Verse 2, serve the Lord with gladness, come before His presence with singing. Two elements here, serving God in a psalm of thanksgiving. So part of that thanksgiving is to serve God. Secondarily here in this verse, come before His presence with singing. So it's not just a matter of coming before Him ready to sing, but there has to be a heart behind those words in that song that expresses that thanks to Him. Verse 3, know that the Lord, He is God. What we know of Him has to be held within our minds and hearts as we're expressing our thanks. It is He who has made us and not we ourselves. This is, we don't have our own lives. We have what He has given us. And our gift back to Him is not a trying to reimburse Him for that. We can't do that. We don't have His power, His might, His strength, His ability to create life. What we're trying to do is recognize that gift He's giving it, living it as best we can, and sharing it with Him. That's what He wants. Ultimately, anyone who gives us a gift out of loving intent wants that, to begin and build a relationship. It is He who has made us and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter into His gates with thanksgiving and into His courts with praise. Gates is a reference to where He resides. Courts is a reference to where He judges, where He makes choices and decisions and teaches us. Be thankful to Him and bless His name. This is all embodied in His name. We have a tremendous respect for His name and all that it entails. Verse 5, for the Lord is good, His mercy is everlasting, and His truth endures to all generations. Those are three critical things to remember and be thankful for. The Lord our God is good. His mercy is everlasting. You see this in Psalm 136, says it over and over again. His mercy is everlasting. And His truth endures to all generations. The trends of human beings, the news items of today will fade over time. But this is the Word of God, the Scriptures, will always be in place. They will never be taken from us. A gift is an offering. It's an opening to make a connection with someone else. And when God grants us His gifts, and we acknowledge that, that's an opportunity to develop a relationship with Him. I made mention to Psalm 136. You can just write that down. It's very repetitive for a good reason. upwards of 20 times, it says, his mercy endures forever. So God grants us his mercy, and the promise is it will always be there for us whenever we ask for it. Why? Why did he give us that, and why should we be appreciative of it? In Psalm 75 and Psalm 97, in all three of those psalms, Psalm 30, Psalm 75, and Psalm 97, it says that we are to be thankful for the fact that we know him by name. We know him by name. Why should we be thankful for that? Why has he chosen to reveal himself to us in his name? Psalm 107, we are told that we need to be thankful for recognizing his marvelous works. So every human being sees around us these marvelous works, the incredible complexity and beauty within his creation, but not everybody recognizes that. In fact, some of them completely, utterly disregard it and reject the idea that there's any design in this, which is an incredibly intellectually dishonest. You can't look at the complexity of this universe and not recognize an intelligence behind its design. But those who do that are blinded. We get that. We don't blame them for that. But we see differently. We are to thank him that we recognize all that we see as his marvelous work. And we see that not just in the trees and the ground and the mountains and the air and the clouds and all this. We see this in one another. Because we, human beings, every human being is made in his image. And if we want to know who he is, we will see him in us. And we will respect every human being for that potential that's in them. And especially in this room, we will respect one another for God in us, our hope of glory. It's in the Colossians. Psalm 119. In Psalm 119, over and over, we're told that we benefit from his righteous judgment and that we are supposed to be thankful for that benefit. We understand how he judges, how he reasons, how he thinks, where the judgment is going to be made relative to the value in our life and what we present and what we provide. That's in his hands, and we're to be thankful for that. Why? Why all of these things? In 2 Thessalonians 2, we might as well turn there. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 13. And Paul does this a number of times in his writings. In speaking to the people in Thessalonica or Philippi or Corinth, he's always expressing thanks for them. He says that here in verse 13. I'll just take it out of context. But we are bound to give thanks to God always for you, brethren, beloved by the Lord, because God from the beginning chose you for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and belief in the truth. The very thought of this and God's intent here brought a desire within Paul to thank God for this. He expresses his thanks for the brethren, those who share in God's sanctification, his setting apart, who share in his Spirit and belief in the truth. God's given us those things. He has set us apart. He's revealed to us his word. He's revealed to us his plan. And we're supposed to be thankful for that. Now, why has he given that to us? Well, he wants something. Not that God is doing this for any selfish reasons. There's a selfish thought in his head, intent in his heart. It's all love. It's all give. It's all outgoing. But there's something he wants for us. He wants that shared relationship. In Leviticus 7, I'll just give you that reference. You can go through and read it. It's pretty detail-oriented. It's describing the thank offering. that someone brought to God when they wanted to thank him for something. It's the same as the peace offering that's offered in the Old Testament, but for different reasons. The offering itself is very similar. It's also referred to as the fellowship offering. Thank, peace, and fellowship, all referring to the same intended gift given to God. And it's really interesting. There's a portion in that thank offering that is presented to God. It's always offered to God. But there's a portion of it that's given to the priesthood, authorities of the congregation at the time. And then there's a portion of it that's also given to the giver. It's a portion the giver keeps for himself. And it's all shared in together. It's the basis of the thank offering. Giving thanks, brethren, recognizes what the gift represents. So when you're given the gift, and you see it in the context of all these things throughout Scripture, you recognize those four critical elements that we see. That the fact that we're being given something, we recognize the giver, we recognize the intent of the giver, and we recognize a relationship has been begun that we have a responsibility to keep up. It's an opportunity to make and grow a relationship in love, beginning with what we call a love language, giving. Let's look at a couple of examples here. Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 2. The beginning of the book of Samuel, the two books of Samuel, we believe written by him, it begins with a story of his birth. And the experience that his parents went through, specifically his mother Hannah, when she could not have children, her womb was barren, and she prayed to God for a child. Her husband Elkanah had another wife, and she kept needling Hannah as well, made it even harder for her. You can read that in chapter 1. Eventually, though, Hannah praying to God makes an offering of that first child. If it opens the womb, she would give it to God. And I don't know how specifically how old Samuel might have been at the time, but I can't imagine a mother giving up her son to Eli for temple service. So now he's going to be living in the temple and learning from the high priest and being taught in the ways of God, but she then walks away from her son. Yet in that setting, she offers this prayer, and it's written down for us. In this, Hannah is expressing thanksgiving to God for his gift to her of Samuel. And she's returning that. She's recognizing that gift wasn't just something for her. It was something that God intended to establish a relationship with Hannah. He saw something in her, a character within her, that he wanted to develop something with. And Samuel became the instrument by which that was done. She recognized that. She understood that Samuel's a gift from God. She knew who gave Samuel to her. She recognized the intent of his gift, and she knew the relationship that God wanted with her as a result. Verse 1, we'll read verses 1 through 10, 1 Samuel chapter 2. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies." And this is a veiled reference to her, the other of Elkanah's wife that was pressuring her. There may have been others. "Because I rejoice in your salvation." Not just the fact that she was saved from barrenness. There's something indicating she understood something beyond this, which gave her the ability to give up her son in this situation for the will and purpose of God, something she willingly did. Verse 2, "No one is holy like you, like the Lord, set apart. For there is none beside you, nor is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumbled are girded with strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, and the hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne seven, and she who has many children has become feeble." She's recognizing the impact of God in her life and seeing examples of this around her, where God makes the weak strong. He fills the barren womb. He provides for those who can't provide for themselves. And those who consider themselves weak and proud and mighty don't get any of that. And she's seeing how barren they actually are in spirit, in mind. They don't have this relationship with God that she has. She's expressing this thanks. She's seeing it in the emptiness in those around her. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap, to set them among the princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. It's a beautiful expression of thanks. And she's recognizing how special she is to God in the context of all the things she was seeing around her. And this is something we need to recognize as well. Uniquely, though the rest of the nation celebrates something they call Thanksgiving or Turkey Day, those blessings that we will share in, both this afternoon and again this coming Thursday, should remind us of how God has set us aside as something special, not just as a descendant of Abraham, but what all he is doing for us to prepare us for some point in the future, that we are on a path to salvation that the rest of the world doesn't understand yet. That's a very special relationship that we share with him, that his giving provided for us. And you know where that culminates? For Hannah, it was a barren womb giving birth to a son. Where did that culminate for us? It may have begun by God blessing you here or there with what you began to understand, what you began to see, but eventually it led to you recognizing his most powerful gift, his most treasured gift, his son, to pay the penalty for your sins. And that becomes the basis of our relationship with him forever. Look at 1 Chronicles 16 here. 1 Chronicles 16 is where David is bringing the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. He was not being well received. I think the people were recognized and understood the celebration, but his own wife was, Michal, was looking at him and deriding him for this because of the way he was making a spectacle of himself, but he was rejoicing. In this rejoicing of coming together and what he was experiencing, he gives thanks to God. And he expresses it this way. And you read this beginning portion between verses 1 and 7, where they're bringing the ark in. His prayer then begins in verse 8. He says, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name." No false name, no other name, not even your own name. When we give thanks to God, there's a recognition and the value of the gift he's given us, a blessing and understanding where that gift came from, an understanding of the intent of the gift, in this case specifically in knowing his name, and then lastly, making this connection, this relationship. "Make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him, sing psalms to him. Talk of all his wondrous works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his face forevermore." Evermore. Verse 12, "Remember his marvelous works which he has done, his wonders and the judgments of his mouth." If you need a reminder of your focus on that day of Thanksgiving, or at any time you find yourself maybe more focused on the difficulties of life instead of the blessings we've been given of life, this is a great place to begin, to see the perspective that David had and recognize what really is valuable here. Verse 13, O seed of Israel, his servant, you children of Jacob, his chosen ones, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. Remember his covenant forever, the word which he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant which he made with Abraham, and his oath to Isaac, and confirmed it to Jacob for a statute, to Israel for an everlasting covenant, which we now benefit from, saying to you, I will give the land of Canaan as an allotment of your inheritance, when you were few in number, indeed very few, and strangers in it. When they went from one nation to another and from kingdom to another, one kingdom to another people, he permitted no man to do them wrong. Yes, he rebuked kings for their sakes, saying, do not touch my anointed ones and do my prophets no harm. Sing to the Lord all the earth, proclaim the good news of his salvation from day to day, declare his glory among the nations, his wonders among all peoples. For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is also to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the peoples are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and gladness are in his place. Give to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Give to the Lord glory and strength. Give to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come before him. O worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Our thanks to him is an offering. We often refer to singing as a sacrifice of praise, but when we bring an offering before him, either in financial form or in any form that we offer to him, we are thanking him. It is an offering of thanks. Tremble before him, verse 30, all the earth, the world is also firmly established. It shall not be moved. It's in place for what he will accomplish with it. Verse 31, let the heavens rejoice and let the earth be glad, and let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Let the sea roar in all its fullness. Let the field rejoice in all that is in it. Let the trees of the wood shall rejoice before the Lord, for he is coming to judge the earth. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. There's that phrase again. And say, save us, O God of our salvation. Gather us together and deliver us from the Gentiles to give thanks to your holy name, to triumph in your praise. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel from everlasting to everlasting. This is the mindset of David in thanks to God. It's a mindset that all who recognize God, the value of his gift, the intent of that gift, and wanting to be a part of it, will recognize and understand. There's another example here I'd like to look at is in Jonah. Jonah in chapter 2, and we'll read verses 1 through 10. Jonah here is giving this prayer. Jonah is just after book of Amos. He's giving this prayer from the belly of the fish after Amos and Obadiah. He's giving this from the belly of the fish. Can you imagine this? So he's told to go to Nineveh. He decides to go in a different direction. God, he takes the boat. He's thrown overboard by the men. He's eaten by the fish. And now he's in the belly of the fish, a special fish made by God in which he could live within it. And this is his prayer. And it's a prayer of thanksgiving. What is he thanking him for? Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the fish's belly. And he said, I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he answered me. And out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the floods surrounded me. All your billows and all your waves passed over me. Then I said, I have been cast out of your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. He knew this was not forever, that this wouldn't be his end, because his relationship with God continued. Verse 5, the waters surrounded me even to my soul. The deep closed around me, weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. The earth with its bars closed behind me forever. You have brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their mercy, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. He's still in the belly of this fish. He's offering God thanksgiving. He's recognizing the connection, the relationship he has with God, and that was more important to him than even dying, or where he was at, or where he had been sent. This was his prayer. And we see all of these elements. Everything that he was expressing here should be in our thanksgiving to God as well. Appreciating what we have been given. Do we even see that? Do we recognize that everything we have, your house, your bank account, the food in your fridge, the bed you sleep in at night, the body that you are in right now, every breath of air you take, every pump of blood in your body belongs to your Creator, to your God. Are you grateful for that? Do we live that way, recognizing it's all a gift from God, every bit of it? Even the difficult experiences that build character for us in this age, do we recognize that's needed as well for us that are growing in the nature and character of God? Do we realize the source for what we have been given, that God is the one that gave us all this, our very existence, and even promises beyond this existence? Do we recognize the intent of God in giving us all this? That he sees us as his children, that we have opportunities to actually live in the family of God for eternity, growing now in his character to be born into his kingdom at Christ's return, to marry into the family of God. And do we recognize that in all those gifts and the reasons he gives them requires a commitment on our part? And it's not just about saying thank you. We say thank you all the time. I do. I say thank you to the checkout lady at the grocery store when she hands me back change for money I just gave her. I am buying stuff from her, and she tells me thank you. But I don't say you're welcome. I say thank you. Really? Does that cheapen then my thank you to God when I'm on my knees? And the words come out the same. Thank you. Thanks, God. Isn't there something more that's needed there? Something that frames everything that we will share in both this afternoon and on Thursday? Something that helps us to understand there's a relationship that God is building here, a relationship that we need to commit ourselves to? That's the giving of thanks. That's what that requires. Full recognition and gratitude toward God requires our involvement in the process of his gift and our response back to him as a result. This Thursday, our nation will share in a day of thanksgiving, as they call it. It's not one of God's annual holy days, but it is an effort made by our nation's leaders to center its citizens on appreciating all that God has given us. And the church will respect its intent. Always have, we always will. Regardless of how others keep it, those who are truly thankful will express their gratitude for the gracious benevolence of our eternal God. And in so doing, they will set their minds on these four aspects and read many different offerings of thanks in the scriptures that contain these. Appreciate what we've been given. Realize the source for what we have been given, recognize the intent of the giver, and lastly, commit to the relationship. Brethren, have a wonderful day of giving thanks to God.